The Bible Study Podcast, episode 722. Today, the Bible Study Podcast continues the study of the book of 2 Corinthians with chapter 7. Welcome to the Bible Study Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We continue on with 2 Corinthians. Chapter 7 goes like this. Therefore, since we have these promises, dear friends, let us purify ourselves from everything that contaminates body and spirit, perfecting holiness out of reverence to God. And I want to pause there for a second so that we remember what promises he's talking about. He was just talking about his hardship and how he was trying not to put stumbling block in anyone's path. And then he talked about not being yoked with unbelievers. So what promises is he talking about? I think he's talking in general about the promise of the faith. He's talking about this overall theme of how we should live and what Christ has died for us, and they're awaiting a new body from the chapter before that. And so because of that, he says, let us purify ourselves from everything that contaminates body and spirit. What are those things that contaminate body and spirit? Be anything that gets in between us and God, anything that becomes more important than God in our lives would certainly be one of those things. And then anything that God has declared as sin would be obviously the other thing. But it doesn't have to be sin, is the one of the reasons I want to bring that out. It's anything that sort of gets in the way. Perfecting holiness out of reverence to God. So the reason why we want to become holy, or the reason why we want to become holy at least, holy being set apart for God's use, is out of reverence to God. Because of what Christ has done for us, because of our understanding of who God is, let's live differently, is really what he's saying. And then in the light of that, he talks about that letter he sent. Remember that letter he sent that may have caused some problems. 1 Corinthians, Paul's joy over the church's repentance. Make room for us in your hearts. We have wronged no one. We have corrupted no one. We have exploited no one. I do not say this to condemn you. I have said before that you have such a place in our hearts that we would live or die with you. I have spoken to you with great frankness. I take great pride in you. I am greatly encouraged. In all our troubles, my joy knows no bounds. For when we came into Macedonia, we had no rest. We were harassed at every turn, conflicts on the outside, fears within. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus, not only by his coming, but also by the comfort you had given him. He told us about your longing for me, your deep sorrow, your ardent concern for me, so that my joy was greater than ever. Okay, I want to pause here for a second because this is going to be a long section here. What's he talking about? Well, Titus was the one who brought his letter to the church and carried back a response, not necessarily a written response, but at least how did they respond to these things that I said? Remember, in these days, you didn't take a letter and put a stamp on it and drop it in the mail. You sent it with someone. And so with all of Paul's letters, sometimes he will mention who has this letter and tell you to take care of that person, or this person comes in my name, or whatever. And in the case of 1 Corinthians, it was Titus, the same Titus who is one of the young pastors who Paul writes a letter to later on, the letter to Titus, like he writes the letters to Timothy. Again, young men who are in his life because he is discipling them and they're part of this ministry that he's doing. And so Titus went off with this letter. And if you think about that, sometimes you get anxious if you send off an email to someone and it may cause some problems and you don't hear back in an hour or two or a day or the week. You know, think about sending a letter in these days where you send off the letter to the Corinthians and you know that it may cause some problems and you have to wait months to find out what happened. And Paul's saying, so we were in the midst of some difficult times. They were in Macedonia, so they're further north than Greece. And he says we were harassed. It was conflicts on the outside, fears within. It was a difficult time for them. And right at this time that things were difficult, Titus shows up with their response. And he says, not only by his coming does he comfort them, not only because Titus is back, but also because the comfort you had given him, because you sent him with comforting words for me. He told Ahab, "Your longing for me, your deep sorrow, and your ardent concern." And, you know, Paul at this point can breathe again because he's not sure necessarily how they're going to take his letter. And so he says, "Joy is greater than ever." So he started this section here, and I kind of skipped over this. "Make room for us in your hearts. We've wronged no one, we've corrupted no one, we've exploited no one." Remember in the last chapter, he talked about how he was trying not to be a stumbling block, trying not to get between the gospel and the people, so that when they heard the gospel and they saw how he lived, there wouldn't be inconsistencies that would cause problems. And sadly, we have seen this with various leaders. We are all corruptible. We are all fallen. We are all sinners. And so we see this sometimes publicly and sometimes privately, that people who don't live up to the gospel, and that includes me, and that includes everyone you know in their private life, may have, you know, things we wouldn't want to talk about, or it may come out publicly in some cases of scandals and things like that. And Paul's saying, I'm trying not to do that. I'm trying not to live that way, so that there's inconsistency between what I say and what I do. And he says, "I've spoken to you with great frankness." And certainly you have to say in 1 Corinthians, he was frank. In some of his letters, he is very frank. He is very honest, and he is not sugarcoating things. But he's saying, "I take pride in you. I'm encouraged because my joy knows no bounds because of you." He's encouraged by the church in Corinth and what has happened there. And remember, he's encouraged by that church. I think he means this, even though they had some really big problems, right? Remember, he talks about the what we would call communion or the Eucharist or the breaking of bread together, whatever it's called in your church tradition, that, you know, some people are going hungry and some people are getting drunk. So they had some things that we would say, wow, this church is really screwed up. And he sees that, and he sees that they have ways to go, but he also sees where they've come from. He also sees that out of these amazingly different backgrounds, that some are slaves and some are masters and some are rich and some are poor, they have built something in Corinth, and he takes joy when he sees that. Imperfect though it is, even though he's writing back to correct to them, he takes joy in their faith. We don't have to be perfect to bring joy to God or bring joy to our Christian brothers and sisters, which is good because we're not. He goes on and says, "Even if I caused you sorrow by my letter, I do not regret it. Though I did regret it, I see that my letter hurt you, but only for a little while. Yet now I am happy, not because you were made sorry, but because your sorrow led you to repentance. For you became sorrowful as God intended, so that you were not harmed in any way by us. Godly sorrow brings repentance that leads to salvation and leaves no regret, but worldly sorrow brings death. See what this godly sorrow has produced in you, what earnestness, what eagerness to clear yourselves, what indignation, what alarm, what longing, what concern, what readiness to see justice done. At every point you have proved yourself to be innocent in this matter. So even though I wrote to you, it was neither on the account of the one who did the wrong nor on the account of the injured party, but rather that before God you could see for yourselves how devoted to us you are. By all this we are encouraged." As I think about this, I think of what we used to say to my kids, you know, when our kids would do something wrong and we would call them on it and they would say, "I'm sorry," and that's fine, but we used to say, "Don't be sorry, change your behavior. I don't care so much about how you feel about what you did. I care about how you are behaving." And that's what he's saying is, "I know I made you sorry for a while, but it led you to change. It led you to repentance, to change your ways." And he's glad that it had that effect, because he says godly sorrow leads to salvation, leads to being saved from that condition of sin that we find ourselves, and leaves no regret. And he continues in the last paragraph, "In addition to our own encouragement, we were especially delighted to see how happy Titus was, because his spirit had been refreshed by all of you. I had boasted to him about you, and you have not embarrassed me. But just as everything we said to you was true, so our boasting about you to Titus has proved to be true as well. And his affection for you is all the greater when he remembers that you were all obedient, receiving him with fear and trembling. I am glad I can have complete confidence in you." I love this section here that's talking about Titus, who is coming with this word of, I don't want to say judgment, but that might be the appropriate term, but he's coming with the word of correction for sure. That probably is the right term to use here. And they know when Titus is coming from Paul that there's some fear and trembling of what Paul is going to say, because they probably know that some of the things they've been doing aren't the right things to be doing. Why else would you receive it that way? But I love that Paul looks at the people of Corinth, and he had two different thoughts that he was able to hold in his mind at the same time. How he could both boast of them to Titus, as well as send Titus to bring some correction. He's not boasting that they are perfect, but he's boasting of the love that they have shown him. He's boasting of the love that they show in the church. He's boasting of their faith. He's saying all these wonderful things about them. The reason why he writes the letter is that he loves them. He doesn't write them off and say, well, these people will never change. He doesn't write them off and say these people aren't worth changing. He doesn't write them off as people who can't change. But he writes them off as people who he loves who need to change something. And I think we would all be a little better off if we saw our brothers and sisters in that light. People whom we love, people of whom we are proud, even if sometimes people whom we need to correct or who need to correct us. Because we are not perfect. And they are not perfect. But we are all loved by God. And with that, we're going to end this episode of the Bible Study Podcast. If you have any questions, send an email to host@thebiblestudypodcast.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at thebiblestudypodcast.com. And thanks so much for listening.
What do you do when the world around you is falling apart? It's amazing to me how many people are breathing air. They're going about their business and doing the things you're supposed to do. But if you really ask them, they know that on the inside, they are spiritually and emotionally and relationally dead. If we're not careful, all of us can experience that death. When what we need to do, even as the world around us is falling apart, we need to learn how to march when it would be easier to stay where we are and die. Join me each week on the March or Die Show as we discuss that and so much more.